Good, very good. Good morning. Today's Daf in Sanhedrin is Mem Hey. We are on the mission, the very bottom of Mem Dalet Amud Beis, and we are at the high point of drama in terms of the execution. The Mishnah is to take us almost literally, step by step, towards the execution. We're talking about Skila. There are four ways to execute somebody, four different forms of Mises Beis Din. We are focusing on Skila. That's where our parak started off. Rashi in the beginning of the parak told us that it's the number one execution, meaning we're not just in terms of what is considered the harshest, what's considered which applies to most of the averes in the Torah. So the focus here is on Skila. So yesterday's daf, we dedicated ourselves to the confession that's given by the Niskal, the one who's going to be stoned. The Achan prior to his stoning gave a vidui, and so we strongly encourage the person to do vidui right before his death. And our mission now is going to take us processionally onwards towards the base of Skila. So Haya Rachuk mi base of Skila Arba Amos. We are now 4 amos away. Our last mishnah had us 10 amos away. That's where we encourage him to do vidui. So it's about 20 feet away. And so now we're 4 amos away. Haya Rachuk mi base of Skila Arba Amos mafshitano so esbegadav. So we strip him of his clothing. Reasons which we're going to explain later on. Now the man is going to be stripped of his clothing, but his private area is going to be covered in the front. And the woman's private area is going to be covered in the front and the back. Div Rav Yehuda. So according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, so both the man and the woman, if they're going to be executed, the execution punishment applies to both men and women. That's the pasuk in the Torah. Later on, the Gemara is going to quote it. Right now, we're discussing the need, the requirement of stripping them of their clothing. And according to Rav Yehuda, it would apply to both men and women in the event that they're going to be executed. And the Chachamim say that, no, a man is going to be thrown off the ledge with no clothing on. He'll be stripped of his clothing, but not the woman. Woman will not be stripped of her clothing. She'll be wearing something. A gown. She will not be stripped of her clothing. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara now starts off with a brisa on the very top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph, and obviously much to explain. Meaning, as I just read the Mishnah, and I said Pshat in the Mishnah, but I didn't give any explanation. Why removal of the clothing? What's behind that? So much to explain. I will do so in the context of the Gemara. The Gemara is going to spell everything out. So the Gemara quotes a brisa. This brisa is going to be a repetition of what we learned back in the Mishnah. Presenting the positions with a little more detail, not much more. Actually, no more detail. Tana Rabbanan. Ha'ish mechatzno. So perik echem alfanav yisha shnei prakim alfanav be'mecharam mimeshikula erva div Rav Yehuda. So again, Shitas Rav Yehuda is that both when a man or a woman is to be executed and stoned, so prior to them approaching the ledge, 4 amas prior to them approaching the ledge, so both the man and or the woman are going to be stripped of their clothing. With the private areas being covered. For the man, that means the front, and for the woman, it's the front and the back. And the Chachamim say that a man will be stripped of his clothing, but not the woman. Okay, so, frankly, I don't know what we've gained by learning the Braisa. It's exactly what we said back in the Mishnah, but anyway. My time out, the Rabbanan. So now the Gemara goes with its usual analysis of what's behind these two positions, or at least how do they learn it from the Pesukim. My time out, the Rabbanan. So here we are in Shitas Chachamim. So it's based on the following. Amakra v'ragmuro. So the Torah, when describing the Skila, and this is regarding the Makala, which we've already discussed a couple days ago. So it says the Torah describes it, oh so. He's going to be stoned. Now why does the Torah use it in the masculine? So Ile Mosovalo Osa, is it because stoning doesn't apply to women? But that's not true. It's simply not the case. Clearly the Torah delineates that in the event that either a man or a woman violates a capital crime, they're both going to be subject to the death penalty. Elamai oso beloksusa, so ha osa biksusa. So the Chachamim say that the reason why the Torah uses the word oso is to teach me that oso really is to tell me that that the man is going to be stripped of his clothing, but the woman is not going to be stripped of the clothing. The way the Gemara presents it right now, it sounds like this is a bona fide drasha. It's an absolute drasha that just simply makes a distinction between a man and a woman. A man is stripped of his clothing, a woman is not. Tosfos on the very top is not convinced that this is a bona fide drasha, But in either event, in other words, it's for our purposes right now, let's just say it simply, since the Torah focuses on the man, oso, so it means that the man is to be stripped of his clothing, not the woman. Rav Yehuda Omer, oso b'lo ksuso, lo shna ish v'lo shna isha. And according to Rav Yehuda, no. The Torah describes him being executed, but who hadin, the same thing would be true regarding the woman. Woman also is going to be stripped of her clothing. Okay, now, as of this point in time right now, so really, all we've gained from the Gemara is that it's possibly a drasha, but we don't have any svar. We don't have any rational explanation of why it is that either the man or the woman are going to be stripped of their clothing. So stay tuned. Again, as we get through the Gemara, we'll understand better what's behind all this. So the Gemara says, assumes like this. Look, according to the Chachamim, a woman's not going to be thrown off the ledge without clothing. In other words, she'll be wearing something. And the Rav Yehuda says that no, she won't be wearing anything. What the Gemara is assuming right now, going into this next step of the discussion, is that principally speaking, really the agreement is that everyone should not have clothing on. Okay, and why? So again, the Gemara hasn't said it yet, and it will be clear as we get to the end of the discussion, because what really clothing does is it creates a buffer, it creates a cushion, literally a cushion. And quite frankly, we don't want that. Meaning, as the Gemara itself later on will point out, that when you execute, you must do so. Look, execution is unpleasant. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to make it digestible. However, still the idea is that we want to try to make it as neat, pleasant, painless as possible. Understand, we're working on a scale. We're working on a curve over here. We're taking somebody's life away. It's never going to be pleasant, but at least make it as comfortable as possible. The assumption the Gemara is making is that without clothing, it would actually be a quicker death. You don't have the cushion of the clothing, you don't have the barrier of the clothing. If I could just remind you, by the Asara Haruge Malchus, right? When somebody, I understand it's not stoning, it was burning, but one of the Chachamim, we're going to read about it again on Yom Kippur. We read it on Tisha B'av, we're going to read about it on Yom Kippur again. So one of the Tanaim who were killed, so they were being burnt, and in order to sustain the burning and make it more painful, so they put tufts of cotton on his chest so that he wouldn't burn right away. And the way the story is related is that someone comes over and takes it away so that he would die quicker. Okay, so the assumption going in is that if you take out all the external material, so then the death would be a quicker death. And so principally, both the Chacham and Rav Yehuda would want them to be unclothed and not have the cushioning. What is the counter consideration? So hirurim, meaning if a man, or in this case, a group of men were to see a woman being thrown off the cliff and she's not wearing clothing, so it would incite the Yetzirah and it would lead to hirurim. You can also say it would be embarrassing for her as well, which the Gemara also is going to take into consideration, but a significant consideration would be hirur. And so where do we have, and if that's the consideration, where are we at right now in the Gemara? Here's where we're at. According to the Chachamim, we're worried about hirurim. Therefore, the woman, even though principally it'd be better for her if she'd be unclothed, but because of the hirurim, that will be incited if she was not clothed, so therefore she'll be wearing something. And according to Rav Yehuda, seemingly, we're not worried about hirurim. And therefore, both the man and the woman is going to be unclothed when thrown off the ledge. That's where we stand right now. The Gemara points out, however, the Mishnah and Sota seems to indicate just the opposite. The Gemara here quotes the Mishnah and Sota. The Mishnah and Sota describes the process in which the Sota is going to be drinking the Mesota. Part of the process is she's going to be disheveled in front of the Kohanim. Right? The Torah describes where you're going to undo her hair. And the Mishnah over there says that it's just more than just undoing her hair. She's going to be made unkept in front of the Kohanim. How far does it go in terms of basically undoing her? So did not akornoches bebegadaim nikru nikruvim nifirmu nifirmu achmegalas liba v'sosos ara. So according to the Tanakama, let's say like this. According to the Chachamim over there in Sota, so basically the kohen will grab her clothing. If it tears, it tears, and if her chest is exposed. Okay, and her hair is going to be exposed as well, and all this will be exposed oddly in the base of Mikdash in front of the Kohanim. And Rav Yehuda Omer Mayaliba Na Eloyem Megalehu V'Mayasara Saarana Eloyasosro. And Rav Yehuda says you have to take into consideration this is obviously going to provide a tremendous amount of irurim for the Kohanim. So if she's attractive, don't do it. Don't reveal her chest and don't undo her hair if it's attractive. But rather, keep her dressed. So now, what seemingly we have is a stira on both sides of this machlokas. Meaning in Sota, Rav Yehuda basically takes into consideration irurim. Over here, Rav Yehuda seemingly does not care about irurim. Because Rav Yehuda is having the executed woman being thrown off the ledge unclothed. And the Chachamim also seem to be crossing their positions. Where here, the Chachamim say she should wear something before being thrown off the ledge. There in Sota, the Chachamim say that she should be undone. Her chest should be revealed, her hair should be revealed, even if she's attractive. So what we have right now is a stira both in the sheet of the Chachamim and the sheet of Rav Yehuda. They both need a resolution. The Gemara is going to provide one right now. Amar Abba. Ha, samayinu tam Hashem ha-teitzev mi-beis n-zakavit garabo pirchei kuhuna. Ha, ha, mikatla. So Rabba gives just a simple and perfect answer to resolve Rav Yehuda. What is going to be the consequence of the woman being executed? She's going to die. So in other words, even though she will be unclothed, and even though, yeah, there may be her horim, but the truth of the matter is this is her demise. It's going to lead to her death. Possible for an appeal, but really unlikely. As opposed to the Sota, where the Sota may walk away from all this. Remember, she's a Sota. We don't know what happened in the room. She secluded herself with a man that she was warned not to be with. And she may have committed adultery. She may not have committed adultery. We don't know. And she's going to drink the Mesota. Now, she just may walk away from all this. But that also means now that the Kohanim had a look at her while she wasn't clothed. So, Rav Yehuda says, just think about where we're going with all this. In the case of the Sota, she may walk away. But with the Kohanim having had a look at her, may be incited, and their Yitzhar is going to be very incited. As opposed to the woman being executed, where now she's dead. And the Gemara says, and maybe v'chitei mahasi lizguri b'achrenaisa, and maybe why the woman is executed, although she's dead, but by looking at her, it'll incite hirurim against other people. The Gemara says that we have a tradition that the Yitzhar is only inciting that which you actually see. So we are not worried that if the population saw the woman being executed without clothing, it'll incite the Yitzhar against others as well. Okay, so what do we have right now? We have resolved the stira between Rav Yehuda's in the Mishnah Sota and our Mishnah here in Sanhedrin. Our Mishnah Sanhedrin has Rav Yehuda saying that she goes unclothed. The Mishnah Sota says that according to Rav Yehuda, the Kohen is going to undress her. How do you resolve the discrepancy? Look at the result of what's going to happen. So I'm a Rav of Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Kasha, the Rabbanan Lo Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay, but you only solved half of our problem. You resolved the stira between Rav Yehuda's. But what are you going to do about the Chachamim? So the Gemara says, look, as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, the answer we gave is excellent, and there's no need to add on to it. But Rabbanan Ami Lokasha. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, we could also resolve the discrepancy as well. Again, let's just set up the discrepancy one more time. According to our Mishnah, the Chachamim say that the woman has to be dressed, even though it'll provide a little more pain in her execution, but she needs to be dressed, seemingly worried about Hirhurim. And meanwhile, over there, in the Mishnah Sota, the Chachamim say, do not undress her if she's attractive. And over there, sorry, other way around. According to the Chachamim, you do undress her, even if she's attractive, and seemingly not worried about Hirhurim over there. So the Gemara says, I can explain the discrepancy of the Chacham in the following manner. Based on the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Amakra v'nivasru kol anashim v'lo sasenu kizi maschena. The Pasuk in Yechezkel describes how punishments sometimes are really meant to serve as model lessons for the rest of us. Meaning that when someone's punished in public display, it's so that we take Musar. That's the Pasuk in Yechezkel v'nivasru. And specifically, the Pasuk in Yechezkel is describing v'nivasru kol anashim. Women should take Musar. Now, how does a woman take Musar? By seeing what happens to the Sota. So, yes, it's true. If a Sota is going to be undressed in front of the Kohanim, it will incite the Yetzirah. And there's no two ways about it. And that's why when the woman is going to be executed, the Chachamim say, put clothing on her. We don't want to incite the Yetzirah. But in the case of the Sota, because this serves as a model lesson for everybody else, because the women now have an opportunity to get Musar from this. So even though undressing her would incite the Yetzer Hara, but the counter consideration is that but women watching are going to look at her and say, oh, we don't want any of this. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is going to ask you a very question. Okay, you're on the right track. So the Gemara says, Hacha. Okay, so Velotas and Kizvi Maschena. Hacha, now here by the execution, Ein Lecha Yisr Gadol Mizeh. You see, in the case of the execution, a person is going to be executed. What more Musr do you need than somebody dying? So the Gemara says, V'chite Malave Beitarte. So the Gemara says, okay, but why are we capping the amount of Musr? Meaning, why not say that let her be executed and let her be unclothed? And again, that's more Musr for the rest of us. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Amar Krav Avtal Recha Kamocha, Bar Lecha Misa Yafe. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have the Pasuk of Avtal Recha Kamocha, which means that when choosing a way for somebody to die, so Bar Lecha Misa Yafe, so you should provide for them what is the best possible death.
So why not just going to the least painful
death? Huh?
So I think it's the least.
Okay, so. Lema de Rav Nachman Tanaihi. So now what the Gemara is saying is that, now are you suggesting that this statement of Rav Nachman, that when opting in terms of how to execute somebody, so the Rav Nachman, the Amora, tells us, after Recha Kamocha, take into consideration, if you were executed, what would you have liked? Okay, it's terrible to think about. It's right, but take that and apply it to other people. So the Gemara says, now you're telling me that this is subject to a Machlokas Tanayim, where there's a Tana who actually disagrees with that? So the Gemara says, lo. To kule amesul de Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, no, everyone subscribes to the rule of Rav Nachman. And now what's open for discussion and debate is what's best in general. Now I know we always have this discussion of, well, why not ask the person, ask him what he'd prefer. Right? Kind of like a last meal, like what would you like to eat? So the Gemara over here in establishing precedent and law is going to now discuss in more general terms, what do people generally prefer? So, and the Gemara says, this is exactly what is at the core debate between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. You see, according to the Chachamim, we're going to put clothing on her before she gets executed. Now, correct, and according to the Chachamim, her dignity is going to be more important than the pain involved in death. So yes, it will be it will be more painful for her to die because the clothing will provide cushioning, but her dignity is going to be to her be more paramount. It's terrible, but I'll just share with you this past summer I was in New York. And I went to go visit the new 9/11 memorial. I highly recommend it. But it's very powerful. So, in one of the displays, they were whatever. It's painful. It's painful to think about. It's painful to discuss. But in the context of our Gemara, it really fits in. So they tell one. You know, they have a room dedicated to the horrors of the actual incident itself. And they described in one of the stories. They described a woman who, while falling, she made sure that her skirt was still kept down. In other words, to maintain her dignity even as she was falling off. So a powerful story, and certainly speaks to our Gemara over here, that the dignity, the human dignity, is going to be more significant to her than the pain involved in death. And Mar Savra, back to the Gemara, Umar Savra Bizune Diinish Adifa Leitfe Minicha Dugufe. I'm sorry, Umar Savra Nicha Dugufe Adif Mi Bizune. And the other position is no, meaning the Shita of Rav Yehuda that says a woman is to be undressed when executed, because since undressing her will provide for her a less painful death, that's going to be more significant to her, more important to her than the dignity of being thrown off naked. So what the Tanaim are arguing about is, look, there are two considerations, and they are both important, right? The amount of pain experienced when dying versus human dignity. They're both important. It's just a question of which one is going to outweigh the other. But they both subscribe to the idea of haftarecha kamocha. It's just a question of, in general, what's more important to a person. Okay. Just before we go on to the next mission, the next discussion, Tosfos is right here on the daf. Tosfos mentions this a couple of times. in Shas, and that is what an unusual application of the pasuk of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. Meaning, Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, generally we understand it to mean, like, hey, you know, the way I like being treated, I should do the exact same thing to other people as well. And the Gemara over here is describing it in the context of how to execute. Or, you know, when you execute somebody, make sure to think about how you yourself would like to be executed. Like, it's a strange application. And Tosos writes over here, and again, it's a couple places in Shas where Tosos says it, but it's right here in our daf today. Yesh mefarshim mishum d'l'recha kamocha l'shach mechayim. So Tosos here has a shita, which is just, you know, I hear it, I say it over, I've said it over before, and every time I say it over, it's like, really? But Tosos has a shita that says that v'haftal recha kamocha doesn't apply while we're alive. It only applies upon death. Why? Because chayecha kodmim. Because we have a general principle, and that is that your life comes before somebody else's life. Right? The Gemara classically describes a scenario in which you have water and your friend does not have water, and you're walking in a desert, and one of you are going to die. In other words, there's only water enough for one of the two of you. So what do you do? So the Gemara says unequivocally that what you're supposed to do, well, actually, no, there is a little bit of equivocation. But the conclusion of the Gemara over there is that you yourself should drink the water and not give it to the other person. Why? Chayecha kodmim, because your life becomes before the other person's life. So, I mean, it's because it's yours, meaning, you know, if it's not yours, so then, you know, if it's whatever. No, it's because it's yours. So the Gemara over there says that you have to drink it because your life comes before the other life. So what Tosus over here is now trying to do is he's trying to balance, well, how do we have Haftal Recha Kamocha and Chayecha Kodmin? And what Tosus essentially says is that Chayecha Kodmin while you're alive, so your life comes before other people. And then Haftal Recha Kamocha, that's only in the course of dying. Admittedly, it's unusual, but also admittedly, just, you know, do a little survey of all the times the Gemara quotes Haftal Recha Kamocha, and you'll find that the Gemara usually quotes it in these unusual circumstances of death. Rarely does the Gemara quote it in terms of just like normal, natural conduct one with another. Okay. Anyway, there's just an interesting sheet of Tosos. Okay. Back to our Gemara. Beis Eskila Haya Gova Shtei Komas. Okay. So we were 10 amos away from the Beis Eskila. We were 4 amos away from the Beis Eskila. Now we're actually on the Beis Eskila itself. It's a ledge. It's a ledge in which the person is going to be thrown off. Now, granted, by the way, this next part of the Gemara is going to be slightly uncomfortable. It's going to be, you know, it's not for those people with a weak stomach. But okay, but this is a description, a very blunt description of the actual skila process. So, basic skila hayagov shtei komos echa min ha'edim dochfo al masnav. So, one of the witnesses now is going to push him. Napach alibo. Now, in the event that he falls to the ground and he falls on his stomach, literally on his heart, hovchol masnaf. So what you're supposed to do now is you're supposed to turn him over because you want to turn him over for the receiving of the first stone. First stone is going to be very heavy. V'imez b'yotza. Now, if it happens to be that if the blunt trauma killed him, so that's it. You can stop the process right there. You don't have to go further with the stoning. Meaning, if the pushing created the death, result in the death, well, then we're done. Now, imlav, hashini no tos evim no snow libo. So, but if he didn't die at that point in time, and now you go to stone number one. Stone number one, as we're going to describe in later this morning, is very heavy. And so you're going to create now more blunt trauma with the stone being thrown on top of him. Imez ba yatza v'imlav ragmu b'chol yisrael. Now, if he dies at that point in time, so you fulfilled the mitzvah of skila, and if not, so then the people that are there are all going to pelt him with stones. Shenemar yad eidim tiyeh b'abrishana lamiso v'yad kol ha'am ba'achrona. And that's exactly how the pasuk describes it. Tana. A lot of details to discuss over here. We start with a b'raisa.
I heard an interpretation that the stones are placed by other people and not thrown at them. Have you ever heard that?
No. Tana. We learned in a b'raisa. V'kamashalo harikan. So where are we talking about in terms of height? So the Mishnah says that it was two komas high. Now koma in modern Hebrew refers to a floor. So the way that if you spoke modern Hebrew, which I don't, but if you spoke modern Hebrew, so you would call that two floors high. But it's really it's an exaggeration. That's not the case. Koma in the context of the Mishnah means the average height of a person. So let's assume, I mean, the Gemara says this all the time, that a person is 3 amas high, right? Less than 6 feet. For our purpose, let's say 5 foot. I know it's, you know, it's a little bit taller than that. But just for the purposes of using numbers, if the height of a person is 5 foot, so then the ledge is going to be 10 feet off the ground. And the Gemara now notes that his actual head is now going to be another height, because consider that he's standing on this ledge of 10 feet. So that means that his head from the ground is 15 feet. So that means that when the head hits the ground, it's going to have fallen 15 feet from its high point. So the Gemara says, "Ami bina kule hai." The Gemara says, "Ariminu." Now the Gemara says, "Now in actuality, we don't need that kind of height. We don't need, meaning." Now I'd like to talk more in amos, just so that we can discuss this in the context of the Gemara. So again, the height of an average person is 3 amos. So now 3 amos results in the person's head being 9 amos off the ground. Now 9 times 6 is 54. So that's 54 tfachim in the air. Now keep that number in mind as we go through the next part of the Gemara. Or Aminu. The Mishnah in Baba Kama. The Mishnah in Baba Kama describes a person digging a pit. A pit is one of the Arba Nezikin, Arba Avos Nezikin. It's one of the 4 main categories of damages. If you dig a pit in Rishus Rabim and somebody's animal falls into the pit and causes damage, you are liable. Furthermore, if you dig a pit in the Rishus Rabim that's 10 Tfachim deep, only 10 Tfachim deep, that's enough to create trauma in which that would kill the animal. And if the animal dies in such a pit, you're responsible for those damages. And then the Mishnah in Baba Kama goes on to describe if the pit is less than 10 tefachim deep and the animal falls in and dies, you're not going to be liable. Okay, but this is not a Baba Kama discussion. This is a what can cause death discussion. 10 tefachim, says the Mishnah in Baba Kama, can cause death. And if death results from a 10 tefachim fall, so then you're going to be liable. So the Gemara's question over here is super simple. We have the person falling off the ledge with the maximum height being 54 tefachim, which is 5 times more than what the Mishnah Baba Kama necessitates. That's a problem.
That's for an animal, right?
The Gemara assumes that observation is good. The Gemara assumes that the same thing is true by animal and man. Although I understand. Right, that's an excellent memory. Right, the Gemara over there attributes part of the death to the asphyxiation as well. Okay, so I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Abarvu, I'm a Krav Aftalrecha Kamocha, Baruch Hamisa Yafe. So number 2, second time today, where the Torah quotes the pasuk Aftalrecha Kamocha in this context, which is that look, 10 tefachim could kill somebody for sure, but to be clear, it could kill somebody.
Likely.
Oh, right, there's a likelihood that it can kill somebody, but over here, we want the person to die. The person wants the person to die. Meaning here, you don't want a situation where he's going to fall and there's going to be a little bit of trauma, enough so that the person may die, but we don't want that. In other words, we want to know with more certainty that the person's going to die, so therefore put him at a higher height, create more blunt trauma, and so that there's a better chance that the person's going to die. So, So the Gemara says, well, really, if we really want this fall to result in death, so then don't stop at 54 tefachim. Meaning lift the ledge up. Lift it up even higher so that we know for sure the person's going to die. So the Gemara says, Mishum de Menava. So the Gemara says, once again, there's another counter consideration, and that is that if he falls from such a height, so what's going to happen is that he's going to fall, and the body's going to be totally mutilated. And that's another consideration. Meaning, on the one hand, we want an execution, but on the other hand, we don't want Nivol Hames. We don't want to totally disregard and provide a lack of dignity for the body. Okay, so again, it's a balance of, on one hand, execution, on the other hand, providing some form of dignity within the execution. How do we know that this is all part of the stoning? Meaning that the pushing off of the ledge is part of the stoning. Meaning, the Torah generally describes skila as skila, which means stoning. Meaning, if I follow the times in the Torah where the Torah describes skila, once by the Makalo, another time by the Mekoshe Sheitzim, the Torah just simply says skila, which means stoning. Where is this idea that there has to be some sort of blunt trauma where I'm falling, I'm pushing him off a ledge and he falls to the ground? Where is that? So Tamalama Yaro. Actually, it is in a strange place, but it's in the Torah, right before Maamon Har Sinai. Remember, in Parshas Yisro, Perek Yutes, so the Torah tells us that we have to put a perimeter around Har Sinai, and anyone who steps beyond the perimeter is subject to skila. The Torah says, Yaro yiyare osa kol yisakel. Now, Yaro means to push. And so, since the first time the Torah mentions skila by Maimon Har Sinai is, there's a reference of pushing and creating trauma, blunt trauma, so too that's going to be true for all generations. In a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the question, well, that was obviously a one-time Avera. That Avera never reappears. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Tamalama Yaro. Minayin shebeskila, tamalama sakol. Uminayin shebeskila uvedechia. Now, how do I know that it's actually the combination of the two? Tamalama sakol yisakel, oh, yaro yiyare. So the Torah puts the two in the same pasuk. Uminayin sheyimeis bedechia yatsa. Now, how do I know that if he died with just simply the fall to the ground, we could stop the proceeding right there and we don't have to go on to step two of skila? So tamalama, oh, yaro yiyare. By the Torah using the conjunction of or as opposed to and, meaning that if he dies through first the trauma, through the falling to the ground, then we don't have to go any further. Minayin she'afla daros. Now, how do we know this applies for generations as well? Meaning, this is obviously only by Maimon Har Sinai, which was a one-time event and a one-time iser. So, answers the Gemara, top now of Memhamon Beis, Tamalama Sakol Yisakel. Rashi says it's from the Lashon Asid, the fact that the Torah uses it not in the present tense, but in the future tense, which is the Torah telling us that this will be standard procedure for all acts of skila. V'imlav adash edashini notel seven. Notel. Now, procedurally speaking, what happens? So first, one of the witnesses is going to push him off the ledge. He's going to fall to the ground. If he dies, we stop the procedure there. If not, the second witness now is going to take the stone and throw the stone on top of him. V'atanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Evan Aisa Sham Masui Shnei Bnei Adam No La V'Nosna Alibo in Meis Ba Yatsa. So the weight of the stone required two people to pick it up to carry it to the top of the ledge. So the Gemara now is giving us a description of it being a stone heavy enough where it needs two people to carry it. So the Gemara's question right now is very simple. How can the second witness by himself push the stone on top of the person? So the Gemara says, L'tamech tikshilach higufa. The Gemara says, before I even answer your question, why don't you reread the braisa that we just read and read it carefully. Masui v'shnei b'nei adam notla v'nosna alibo. Even the language of the braisa clearly indicates that it's only the second witness that's going to throw the stone on top of the person. So how does that work? Ela demade le bahade chavre vishadi la ihu kiechid tarbe taisi marzaya. So the Gemara explains like this. Here's what happens with that stone. In terms of picking up the stone and putting on the ledge, you're going to need two people to do so. It requires two people to do so. But in terms of then, once the stone is on top of the ledge, so now we have all the potential energy there. Now it's just a question of pushing the stone on top of the person. So the kinetic energy. So that can be done by one person. Because now all you need is a push. And the Gemara says actually better to be done by one person as opposed to two. Right? The Tesi Marzaya, the way Rashi explains that, Koach gadol d'shnayim en yichom l'chavin kocham l'ashlich ke'echad, kishezem mashlich zem ma'akvo, aval yechidim mashlich b'koach. You see, when you have two people pushing, the way Rashi describes it, it's a lot of physics involved. When you have two people pushing it, so they're coming from two different perspectives, and the force that's being applied to the stone is kind of like, almost like, they're not pushing in opposite directions, obviously, but they're not pushing it in the exact same direction. So there's going to be a little bit of contradictory forces if two people are pushing it. As opposed to if one person pushes it, so he's pushing it in one singular direction, and on top of that also, he's got a better way of aiming it and directing it. Right? The Mishnah described how the stone should be landing directly on the chest of the convicted felon. So it's better that one person push it. Fine. So the Gemara says, so procedurally now we have a better understanding. Two people are lifting up the ledge, one person's pushing it. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa says we never needed to get on to step three, where everyone else is throwing the stones on top. So mi kamina da avid di imatzrich kamina. So the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah is not arguing with that point. Meaning the Mishnah just simply says this would be the next step, But the Bryce is just telling us that in practicality, it never happened, never needed to happen. Amar Evan Haisa Vhulev Atanya Achas Evan Shiniskabov Vachas E Shinitla Alav Vechat Saif Shinaragbo Vechat Sura Shinechnakbo Kulan Nikbarin Imo. Gemara is bothered by the following. It seems like there was a stone that was always consistently thrown on top of the Niskal, and it was the same stone every time. That's the Mishnah describing Evan Haisa, there was this stone. On the other hand, we also know that when a person is executed, so that which he was executed is going to be buried together with him. Now, why should that be? The simplest explanation probably is that it has remains of him on the item. The stone that was thrown on top of him, the sword that was used to behead him. So in other words, it has part of his remains on the item. And we know that in a burial, in a kvura, so you need to bury all remains of the person. So the simplest explanation why it needs to be buried with him is because it has part of his remains. So, what bothers the Gemara now is that how could we be describing the stone when meanwhile, every single time you have to get a new stone? Because the previous stone was buried together with the person. So, l'tzricha d'metaknim ha'isachmina, the chilufayu. So the Gemara says, okay, what happens is that prior to the skila, or maybe immediately afterwards, whichever the case. In other words, another stone is going to be set up for the next skila. And just I want to remind everybody, like I mentioned just yesterday, the next skila probably be 7 years from now, 70 years from now. Meaning it'll be some time from now. But in other words, basically, even though Mishnah says the stone, it doesn't really mean the one and the same stone. This stone is going to be buried with this person. It's just that before the burial is done, so we're going to make another stone mimicking this stone. Nikbarin imo, v'atanya nikbarin imo. Now, we just said that the sword, the stone, all the things that are used in conjunction with this execution is going to be buried together with him. But meanwhile, the Gemara quotes a brisa that says it's not going to be buried with him. Am Rapapa ma'imo imo b'tfisaso. So Rapapa says that it's going to be buried with him, but not like in the same grave site. It'll be buried within proximity. Rashi says, Besoch arba amos. It'll be buried within four amos proximity, but not directly together with him. And we'll discuss a little bit more of this point in tomorrow's daf. Amr Shmuel, Nakta Yara Eden Potter. Okay, we're going to see this later on in the 8th parak. We're seeing it right now. The Gemara, in just a moment, is going to be quoting from the 8th parak as well. The Torah describes the witnesses pushing him off the ledge with his hands, right? Yad ha'edim, right? Yad ha'edim t'yeba b'rishona. The hand of the witnesses is going to be on him. What if, I know this is such a technical question, but this is Gemara. This is where we discuss these technicalities. What if the witness doesn't have a hand? He's an amputee. So now the Gemara is going to quote in the name of Shmuel, we have now an exemption, an exception. Because he does not have a hand, and because now we cannot be compliant with the pasuk of Yad Ha'idim Tiyah Babrishana, so therefore he's not going to be pushed off the ledge.
How come the guy was not disqualified as a witness in the first place?
Yeah, okay, so good. So wait just 1 second. So my time at the being a Yad Ha'idim Tiyah Babrishana, Valeika. So the Gemara says, because the Torah says Yad Ha'idim. And since I can't comply with that detail within the pasuk, so therefore he gets off as a. As just an exemption.
So he gets convicted and gets killed.
It's weird.
The witness lost his hand afterwards.
Okay, so that point is going to be clarified. Just give me a second. So alameata edim gidmim demikara hachanam depasli. So the Gemara says, well, what does that mean? Let's say a person comes in with no hand. He already is an amputee and he's ready to testify. So you mean to tell me now that thinking, all we have to do is just project a little bit ahead. If he testifies and if he's convicted, this witness now is going to need to push him off, but he doesn't have a hand. So we say now, look, I just flash forward to where all this can end, and you don't have a hand, you can't push him off, so we can't accept your testimony. Gemara says, do you really think that's what's going to happen? The Gemara says, no. Shani hasam da amakra yad ha'idim sha'isa kvar. Now, the only time that the exemption is going to realize is only when he had a hand, and then he no longer had a hand. Meaning sometime between the conviction and the actual execution, so he lost a hand at that point in time. Or maybe I'm making the window a little too small. Maybe it's from the time that he testified to the time that the execution occurs. So, which also is not a very long time, but whatever the case is. But the Gemara is saying very clearly that if he came into court as a witness with no hands, that's acceptable.
If just one out of many witnesses is an arm missing, that's going to affect the whole
thing? No, in other words, no, again.
Can other witnesses walk, step in, instead of like, if there's like a 15...
Oh, I see what you're asking. I see what you're... Okay, I don't know. Okay.
It's an expression of it,
right? You know, okay. Again, just wait one second, because... I'm going to address that as well. The Gemara is going to address it. Meitzvei. Kol makom she'yadu shtayim v'yomer ma'idim anu b'yishponi she'nigmar dina b'beisim ploni yadav ari zeyei areg. The Gemara quoting a halacha, which we're going to see in Makos, and that is as follows. Let's say I have witnesses who have testified that this person was convicted. In other words, and somehow, some way, he was able to, he ran away. He's a refugee. But in other words, but witnesses now are testifying to the fact that he is convicted. He's convicted of a capital offense. So based on the testimony, what we're going to do is we're going to put him to death. And what bothers the Gemara now is, wait one second. These witnesses now who are testifying, they're not the ones who actually saw the murder. And doesn't the Torah say, according to Shmuel, that in order to go through with the execution, you need the witnesses themselves to push him off? Over here, these are not the witnesses. These are witnesses who just saw the trial. So the Gemara says, Tirgam HaShmuel Bahein Hein Eidav. So Shmuel says, look, I understand the Brisa is very difficult, according to my opinion, but I will interpret the Brisa that these witnesses are the same witnesses who saw the crime itself. And therefore, we can comply with the Torah. V'chibin Ekraki Dechsev. And now we get on to Danny's issue. And Danny basically said, just a moment ago, I don't understand. The Torah says that the witnesses have to push him off the ledge. If you can't do that, we really are going to call off the entire execution. Meaning that just because the Torah introduces us to a particular detail, a failure to comply with that detail now means that the whole thing is thrown off. The whole thing is dismissed. It's rather remarkable. And the Gemara says, Vatanya. And I'll show you a couple places throughout Halacha where this is not so. Meaning, just because we can't comply with one detail does not mean that we're dismissing the whole thing. Gemara says, let's consider. I know I just read a lot, but basically here's what we just learned together. I have a murderer. A murderer is to be killed using the Mises basin of Saif, of decapitation. And what if I don't have a sword available? So the halacha is very clear. You execute him in any means available. Obviously, the prescribed manner is saif, but if you don't have that, so then you kill him in any manner available. So what we just learned together is that despite the fact that you can't comply with every detail, and here, by the way, it's not like even a small detail. It's the method in which you're supposed to kill him. But if you can't comply with that detail, but you can do it in some other manner, do it in some other manner. And what the Gemara now is saying over here is the guy doesn't have a hand. Okay, but he's got a shoulder. I'm sorry for being a little blunt over here. But drop your shoulder and just push him off with your shoulder. Meaning, okay, so you can't use your hand. It's a detail. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam, Damakra Mosimas. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? The murder is different because the Torah uses a double language. V'ligmar mineh, okay, the Gemara says, but that should create a precedent. Meaning, so good, so now create a precedent that throughout the Torah, if I can't comply with this particular detail, but okay, but in other words, but get to the objective. The objective is to kill him, so get to the objective.
Why could an armless witness appoint a shliach to do it for
him? Okay, that's, again, your question is basically the Gemara's question. Meaning, do it, just, you know, get it done. And you can't comply with this detail. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mishum Davi Rotzech, V'gol Adam, Sheksuvim Baim Ke'ech, V'chosh Neksuvim Baim Ke'ech, Adem Alamdim. So the Gemara says, because the Torah mentions this exceptional rule two times. And when you have the Torah mentioning it twice, so we have the principle of, that's not a binyanav, that's not a precedent, but now these are the exceptions to the rule. Rotzech Adamar, now by the murder we just learned together, that if the murder is to be executed, you kill him in any manner possible. And Gol Adam, i.e., now in terms of the Gol Adam, by the way, also describing a murderer, but a murderer who did so b'shogeg. The Tanya will learn from the Brisa, Gol Adam, Yamisa, Sarotzeach, Umitzvah begol adam. Uminayshim ein lo goal shebeitim ma'amidim lo goal. Now, let's say there is no goal adam. Okay, there's no family member who could seek vengeance. So, interestingly, Basin will appoint somebody. Okay, so these are, I'd say bounty hunters, but not really bounty hunters, meaning more than bounty hunters. Meaning appointed goal adams by Basin. Shenemra bipigobo mikamakom. So again, the Torah says over here, there is an amplification that even if there is no technical goal adam, but Basin will appoint a goal adam. But these are the two exceptional cases. What the Gemara now is contending is that in other areas of halacha, if you can't meet and comply with every detail, so the whole process is called off. In the case of the Ben Sorer Umore, which we're reading this Shabbos, which comes up in the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, right? We're going to get to in about a month from now. So the Torah says that the parents have to have certain requirements, and a failure in any one of these requirements means that we do away with the entire Ben Sorer Umore process. So, for example, v'safsu bo v'lo gidmin, the parents have to be able to grab the kid. If the parents don't have hands, no, he's not a Ben Sorer Umore. Meaning, even if he acts like a Ben Sorer Umore, but because we don't have this particular detail, so we don't go through with the procedure. And you have to be able to walk the kid out. If the parents are not ambulatory, the whole proceeding is called off. The amru velo ilmin, they have to be able to speak, parents. Beneinu zev velo sumim, they have to be able to visually identify their own child, which means if they're blind, we don't go through with it. And einenu shomeh bekolein velo charashim, they have to even be able to hear their own voice if they're deaf. Again, so my time alam mishum debina krak dechsev. So again, this idea of the Torah gives us the detail, and if a failure to comply with any one of the details means that the whole proceeding is called off. So the Gemara says, "Oshani asim dekuli kra yaserehi." So the Gemara says that's an exceptional case because that pasuk in its entirety is a superfluous pasuk. And see Rashi who explains why that particular pasuk is totally superfluous. Tashma, ein lo rechov, ein nasis ir nidachas divrei Bishmal. Rabbi Akiva Omer Ein La Rechov Osen La Rechov. We're talking now about the Ir Anidachas, a city that is sent into a status of being a subversive city. The majority of the people are being over to Avodah Zarah, and in terms of what happens to that city, the people being over to Avodah Zarah are going to be put to death, and all the possessions are going to be brought into the city, into the center street of the town, and burnt right there. What if said city does not have a street? Right, this summer in my trips out to the more rural areas of this country, so I actually visited cities that don't have streetlights. It's like okay, so ad kan lo pli gal de mar savar rechove de mikar bino mar savar rechove de hashtanamik de mikar dami. And over here, the only issue is whether or not a street just made or a street was needed to have been there is acceptable. Avad kol ha'am bina kra kedichsiv. But everyone says you need a street. And if an Ir Nidachas doesn't have a street, even though the people behaved in an Ir Nidachas manner, we're not going to give the city Ir Nidachas status if there's no street. Again, the idea is that if you're missing a detail, so then we just simply do away with the entire halacha. So the Gemara says, Tanaihi. And the Gemara now says, this issue of if you're missing a detail, whether or not we just simply do away with the entire procedure, is subject to a machlokas Tanaim. 14th parak of Nigayim. I looked it up. Ein lo bo'en yad bo'en regel ozen yamanis ein lo tahara olamis. Okay, the mitzara. At the end of the procedure goes through a tahara process. The tahara process involves and includes the application of blood of the chatas and the oil to be placed on his right earlobe, on his right thumb, and on his right toe. And and what if said mitzara doesn't have a right ear, a right toe, or a right thumb? So according to the Tanna Kamma, the procedure is called off. And what about the fact that he's not going to have a tahara? According to the Tanna Kamma, that's going to be the consequence. Right. Right. That will be the consequence. It's an unfortunate consequence, but he's missing a toe. He's missing a thumb. Rabbi Eliezer Armin Osen Amakoma Vyotse. Rabbi Eliezer says you put it on the area where it was. right? The phantom limb, if you will. And Rabbi Shimon Omer knows in al smol v'yotze. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, you put it on the left thumb, or you put it on the left toe, and you put it on the left ear. In other words, that will serve as a fair substitute. Now, every one of these shittas deserve much more attention and much more explanation, but for our purposes right now, what do we see over here? Again, this very, very, very a fundamental issue of what if you're missing a detail? If you're missing a detail, does that do away with the entire procedure? According to the Tanakhama, that's correct. Meaning, if you're missing an ear, if you're missing a toe, if you're missing a thumb, so that's it. In other words, then that's it. Procedurally, we can't go forward. And we just simply don't do it. So too over here, if the witness is missing a hand to push him off, so then we're missing a detail, so then procedurally we don't go any further. Meaning we don't go on with the procedure looking for some sort of substitute. Meanwhile, according to Rabbi Elazar and according to Rabbi Shimon, no, we do seek a substitute. And we're missing a detail, but we'll just seek some sort of substitute, and then they debate what exactly is going to be considered a fair replacement of his toe, his thumb, etc., etc. So the Gemara says this issue of needing every detail and lacking a detail is going to be a disqualification of the entire procedure. Gemara ends off on a little bit of a cliffhanger. It's machlokas tonight whether or not it's going to do away with the entire procedure.